and welcome to the Good Robot Andys. My name is Andy Balaam, and this is
Andy Cockerill. What season and episode?
Do I'm supposed to say that first?
Yes. You've been on holiday, so you're a bit rusty.
Yeah. I didn't sleep a lot last night. This is season 6, episode 5.
Cool.
At least if my numbering of the previous episode was correct.
Yes, it is. Okay.
And the film we're talking about this evening is...
You Were Never Really Here.
Yes, but what film are we talking about?
You Were Never Really Here.
Yes.
We've already done that gag.
Yeah, but it's much better when you repeat it.
It is, yes, that's true.
For the audience.
You Were Never Really Here.
Yes, but what film are we doing?
You were never really here. You were never really here.
So the reason I'm delaying is that I can't think of any plot summary based entirely on the title. I mean, the good news is I haven't seen it or even heard of it. So,
that's good.
So I'm fully in the place of the listener.
Well, before we dive into it, I've got a couple of bits of movie news that might be of interest to listener.
Okay.
A couple of bits of genre movie news. Okay. Which, we like a bit of a genre.
We do.
As long as
that's one of the very restricted couple of genres that we like.
Well, yes, horror, sci-fi. That's it, isn't it?
Horror, sci-fi. As well.
Horror, sci-fi. That's a crossover. Yeah. Hey, if only there was a movie that has a crossover in horror and sci-fi.
Yeah. Well, maybe that would be number one in my best ever horror sci-fi movies.
Maybe it would, yeah.
Also, you probably like comic book or some rubbish like that as well, right?
Yes, I do like comic book. Yeah, I do. Yeah. So the first bit of movie news is that Stephen King's 1979 novel. It was published in 79, called The Long Walk, also known as The Walk.
And this is published by him under his pseudonym, where he writes more sci-fi type things.
Yes, Richard Bachman.
Yeah.
It was released in a compendium called the Bachman Books. That's been turned into a movie, which is interesting.
That is interesting. I really liked the book, The Running Man.
Yeah, the book, The Running Man, is terrific.
Famously destroyed as a film, and including Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So there's a long, complex story behind why The Running Man is such a terrible, terrible film.
Someone could do a good one.
Yeah. But the synopsis of it is that when they went through several directors and screenwriters, they realised that they needed to get it done cheaply and quickly.
And badly.
So they went to Paul Michael Glaser, who was either Starsky or Hutch in Starsky and Hutch, because I can't remember which.
Ant or Deck.
It's like, exactly. Yes, it's like Ant or Deck. He was either Starsky or Hutch. Mm-hmm. And they said, hey, we've heard you can do things cheaply and quickly. Is that true? And he said, yeah, I'm your man. So they said, well, we've got this film that we want to ruin. Can you come and ruin it for us?
Just get me Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Just get me Arnie and in a leotard, and we're on.
It's so nothing like the book.
The book is anyway. So the Long Walk is...
Known as The Walk, did you say?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I think it's known in the book. It's known as The Walk rather than The Long Walk.
Okay.
Is a huge, for me, in the same way that The Running Man is also a huge influence on The Hunger Games and other kinds of teen lit fiction from the last 10 years or so. Huge influence, particularly The Long Walk, in that it is about a yearly event, an annual walking contest. 100 teenage boys join an annual walking contest where each contestant, called a walker, interestingly, must maintain a speed of at least 4 miles an hour. If he drops below that speed for 30 seconds, he receives a verbal warning. A walker who slows down again after receiving 3 warnings is ticketed. The meaning of that is kept vague at first, but it, it becomes clear that buying a ticket means to be shot dead by soldiers riding in half tracks along the roadside. So it's pretty bleak, dystopian stuff. I do wonder, though, given that, you know, all of the kind of teen dystopian dramas have now run their course, so The Hunger Games is well finished.
Mm-hmm.
The Maze Runner movies are done. The Allegiant films sputtered out into video on demand. I can't think of any others at the moment. I'm wondering if it's going to find an audience, because I think, like so many properties that get adapted years after the thing that inspired them was released, that maybe it might seem derivative, even though it's not derivative.
That could happen, definitely.
Yeah, which would be a shame, because I think that and The Running Man, you know, The Running Man is a film that is crying out to be made again, but made better.
Yeah, but Series 7, The Contenders, how could you top that?
You could top it. Yeah.
But anyway, you literally can't top that.
Okay, so that is my first bit of movie news. The other bit of movie news is one that I'm sort of following up with one that I talked about a little while ago on the pod, which was about film director Zack Snyder, who made the Dawn of the Dead remake from a few years ago, ten years ago. I think. A very good remake.
I think. Surprisingly good.
Yeah, quite gruey and gory and very believable. Featuring, I think, the first time we'd seen running zombies in a film.
Yeah, I mean, you had them in things like 21.
But they're not zombies.
Yeah, but it's a zombie film. Just because it's rubbish, yeah. we don't pretend it's not a zombie.
Quite, yeah. So I talked on the pod about his returning to the zombie genre.
I forgot why, but I was excited.
So yeah, let's recap that. Okay, so it's to do with presumably set in the same universe that his Dawn of the Dead is set in. Some cities have been walled up. Some of them have been walled up with humans inside them. Some of them have been just contained because they're full of zombies.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time that I talked about this, it was a heist movie.
Which sounded
fantastic.
Yeah.
So like greedy mercenaries breaking into a city that's been quarantined to rob banks, which presumably had been abandoned. That sounded great.
Yeah.
What I've heard more recently is that plot line has changed a little bit, and that now it's set in Vegas, which is interesting because Dayglow Vegas full of zombies is quite enticing. The main character is actually going there to rescue his daughter. And whilst they're there, they decide to do some robbing and stealing. And that, to me, is kind of not quite as pure as I was expecting it to be. It
doesn't sound like a heist movie.
It doesn't sound like a heist movie anymore, no. It sounds like they've kind of bottled it a bit.
I was hoping for Ocean's Z.
Ocean's Z! That's it! Ocean's Z.
Once you got the title, the rest of the pitch is easy, right?
It's easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You don't even need a big table full of cocaine to do that pitch. You just say, zombies in Vegas with Danny Ocean.
Bring your own
cocaine. Bring your own cocaine, please. So yeah, that's an update on Zack Snyder's zombie movie, which I would still watch.
I mean, it's a zombie movie. You've got to watch it.
Yeah, and I think if he does a good job, as good a job as he did on his Dawn of the Dead remake, then, you know, I'm in.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. It was like 2002, I think. Long time. Those are my bits of movie news. For listener.
Cool.
There we go. Shall we... shall I give... Are you going to get a synopsis of You Were Never Really Here? Or shall I dive in?
No, I think you'd better just go for it. Tell me a bit about You Were Never Really Here.
Okay, so synopsis is... It is a psychological action thriller written and directed by Lynn Ramsey. based on the 2013 novella of the same name by Jonathan Ames. And it stars Joaquin Phoenix, Ekaterina Samsonov, Alex Manette, John Doman, and Judith Roberts. And an unfinished version of the film premiered at the 2017 Cannes Film Festival, where Ramsey won the Best Screenplay Award and Phoenix won the award for Best Actor. It was then released in 2018 in the UK by Studio Canal and in the United States by Amazon Studios.
So I tell you what we should do is, listener,
yeah,
why don't you send in your plot summary based entirely on the title and try and rescue me. So before you listen to the bit that Andy's just said, send us in on Mastodon or even on some proprietary network like Twitter.
Twitter, yeah.
Or by putting a comment on the blog at artificialworlds.net/goodrobotandys. give us your plot summary of a film called You Were Never Really Here, knowing nothing about it.
Cool. Okay.
Cool. So you've seen it?
I have seen it.
You like it?
I loved it. I'll just say I loved it. From the very top, I absolutely loved it. So Lynn Ramsey, let's talk about Lynn Ramsey before we dive into the film. She's a Scottish filmmaker. I think famous to me for not making very many films, despite being around for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm.
She's very uncompromising in what she does. She only does stuff that she wants to do. She writes and directs. She tends not to direct other people's stuff. So although this is an adaptation of somebody else's work, she did write the adaptation.
Mm-hmm. So what else has she done?
Okay, so she's made a movie called Rat Catcher. Morvan Colour, which I haven't seen. I haven't seen Rat Catcher either. But in 2011, she made a movie called We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Ah, yes.
Which I have seen.
Which I haven't seen, but it's based on the book of the same name.
It's based on a book.
Which I also haven't read.
Which I haven't read, but I have seen the movie. Adapted from Lionel Shriver's novel of the same name. I absolutely loved We Need to Talk About Kevin in a way that, you know, you love a film that's very disturbing and psychologically quite damaging.
Mm-hmm.
But I just loved I just love how she put it together.
Right.
You know, in what is famously another one of these unfilmable books.
Right.
That deals with the aftermath of a teenager going crazy with a crossbow.
Right.
It deals with that aftermath in a very interesting way. But we're not here to talk about that film. But certainly, Lynn Ramsey deals, you know, she makes movies that she wants to make. She makes movies that are difficult, but beautifully made. And things that stay with you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Really important. That, you know, there's images from You Were Never Really Here that are still there. Music by Johnny Greenwood, which is great, from Radiohead.
Right.
Who is, I think, a frequent collaborator with Paul Thomas Anderson. On things like, I think he's been involved in all of his movies since There Will Be Blood. Certainly his score for Phantom Thread is amazing.
Phantom Thread?
Phantom Thread.
What's that?
That's a film by Paul Thomas Anderson about a clothing designer played by Daniel Day-Lewis.
Okay.
Yeah. But, anyway, I'm digressing. I'm trying not to digress. I'm trying not to be too tangential today.
It's all right. They love it.
I know they do, yeah. So the plot of You Were Never Really Here is Joe, who is played by Joaquin Phoenix, in, I think, a career-best performance. And I think, you know, Phoenix has given some great performances over the years. But I think he is on incredible form in this film.
Mm-hmm.
He's a traumatized hired gun whose backstory... This is a short movie. This is, you know, like a 90-minute film whose backstory is not really gone into in any great detail. But you know, Phineas is such a great actor that he paints the picture for you and gives you an idea of the kind of trauma that this man has probably endured.
Mm-hmm.
His speciality is rescuing trafficked girls.
Mm-hmm.
So his weapon of choice is a claw hammer. So he doesn't really carry guns. He does use guns in the movie, but he doesn't carry one.
Mm-hmm.
He carries a hammer. So that gives you an idea of the kind of brutality that's on display. Occasionally on display in this film. It doesn't wallow in it.
Mm-hmm.
But when it happens, it's very real.
Mm-hmm.
He cares for his elderly mother in his childhood home in New York City. And he has flashbacks of the abuse he and his mother faced from his violent father and his brutal past in the military and FBI. And is troubled by suicidal thoughts. So somebody likened him, his psyche, his psychology, to a bag of nails. That's mm-hmm. that's what it's like. This man is a bag of nails, is a walking trauma, basically. Mm. So he gets approached by someone to rescue a young girl. Which he does, so he then realizes that he's involved in something really insidious and nasty, and goes on a rampage.
So the people who've hired him are bad people.
They are also bad people. Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're involved in whatever is going on here,
mm-hmm.
up to their eyeballs in it. There's government agents involved as well. It's a mess. You know, the whole thing's a mess. You know, it's gone from him, you know, living what you might call a fairly simple life of caring for his mother, rescuing girls, taking the money for doing that. It's all gone pear-shaped for him, basically. And his kind of safe haven life, such as it is just disappearing around him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he rescues her. More violence ensues. He intends to kill himself during the movie, but doesn't. I won't really give too many plot spoilers away. I'm trying not to spoil this one too much, actually. I think it is. And at the end, he and the girl sort of disappear into the sunset, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
After she tells him, "It's a beautiful day, Joe," and then they leave.
So what's making you want to not spoil it?
I think because of the there are some plot twists and turns,
mm-hmm.
that I think listener will find very satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know that this is a spoilerific podcast, but I think in this case, I'm saying listener needs to see this with a fresh pair of eyes, kind of thing.
So we're anticipating that quite a lot of people won't have seen this. I certainly haven't even heard of it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So you just want to make sure that someone who started off listening to this podcast thinking they probably wouldn't see it, but halfway through has decided that they probably will see it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Won't have it ruined.
And we'll talk about why I think people should see this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It is violent at times, but it's made with quite a lot of the exterior shots of New York were shot using guerrilla style, not guerrilla as in primate, but guerrilla filmmaking. Mm-hmm. Techniques, so they very often didn't have permission to shoot, so Phineas would just sort of get out of the car and walk along the street, and they would shoot him from the car even though they didn't have permission to do so, that kind of thing. So
what's the status of a film if that's how it was made? Can they get sued?
No, it's perfectly legal to do so.
But it's also perfectly legal for someone to just ruin your film.
Yes, because it's a public space.
Mm-hmm.
So someone could just step in front of the camera,
mm-hmm.
Someone can put their hand in front of the lens, and there's nothing you can do about it. Obviously, it's your property,
mm-hmm.
So you know if they damaged it, you could claim damages off them. But as you say, if you don't close the street, then the public can just walk in front of the lens. So yeah, it's perfectly okay to do it, but you know, it's also perfectly okay for someone to ruin your movie. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
So was it done on a very low budget, or was this deliberate?
Absolutely low budget. Yeah, I'm just trying to see. I can't see a budget anywhere. Unless it's further down. No, it made 7.4 million, which is actually a good return, I think. Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead.
What is it about it that so affected you?
I think it's a story of redemption that's really affected me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Phoenix is an actor who can sort of display the human condition on screen. When he's at his absolute best, he's like a tortured soul. And here, you know, that's why Lynn Ramsey has cast him in this movie. Is that he is, well, as I said, a psyche, he's a bag of nails. Everything's there for you to see. It's beautifully shot. The score is amazing. But it's Phoenix's performance that makes the movie. And the twisty-turny plot, which I won't talk about. And there's images from it that have stuck in my mind. There's one particular one of him flexing what, you know, massive arms that he's got. He's been working out. But not working out in a way that he looks really ripped. It looks like, you know, he's just like a big guy. And he's been, you know, he's sort of staring at himself in the mirror and sort of studying himself. And it's just really disturbing and kind of harsh looking, but still quite beautiful at the same time. So visually it's just terrific. It's an incredible redemptive tale.
Sounds like Raging Bull.
Yeah, that's a really good comparison, actually, in that everybody in the movie is absolutely on their A game. And you know, I don't think you would automatically think, if you knew who Lynn Ramsey was, you wouldn't automatically think that this would be something that she would make. But the combination of her and this material just go hand in hand. It's just, I think it's one of the most perfect films I've ever seen.
So how does it not fit with her normal thing?
Well, I say that, but actually, I think if you look at her back catalogue, it's actually quite hard to pin her down.
Right.
So this is in keeping with her career thus far, in that she's just going to make what she wants to make.
Unpredictable. Yeah.
Yes, exactly, yes. But like we need to talk about Kevin, it's another impeccably made film dealing with a very difficult subject matter. But making it... I think that you will never really hear, despite its... it does have a kind of magical realist fantasy element to it. So you're never really sure about what you're seeing is what you're actually seeing, or if it's his psyche showing you what you think you should be seeing. There's that element to it that I really enjoyed, because I enjoy when a filmmaker kind of messes with my perception of reality. I like that. I know that that's not for everyone. I know that some people don't like to be manipulated like that, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
If it's done well, then it's really interesting when people do that. It's just, I think that you'll never really hear is an astonishing piece of work. It's one of these ones that I watched whilst we were doing the top 30 countdown, of which I have quite a large backlog of films to talk about, and this is one of them. Plus it's 90 minutes long, so it won't wear out its welcome. it does what it does with expediency.
So it's interesting that you talked about redemption, because I'm thinking something like Raging Bull, which is this picture of this tortured soul. There's no redemption at all, right?
No. In fact, it ends really dark, doesn't it?
So
disturbing.
Interesting to have... to be allowed to have some hope in the midst of that.
Definitely. This does give you hope that even someone who seems to be just utterly, utterly messed up as this character does, can find some kind of hope and redemption in their life. Because some truly horrible things are done to him during this movie. I'm just going to go down to the critical response. It received a 7-minute standing ovation at Cannes, which isn't all that unusual. I think that kind of thing happens quite a lot there.
tell you what, I'm not sure I would want to stand up for 7 minutes.
That's
after
a long time, isn't it?
I mean, you need to stretch your legs a bit.
Yeah. With critics lauding Phoenix's performance, for which he won Best Actor, Ramsey's direction, musical score, and the editing. Yeah, the editing is very clever.
Right.
It's very choppy and jump cutty, which is fantastic.
Hmm. That sounds like it's right on the Andy C's
yes
favourite stuff list, right?
It really
wobbly
is,
cam.
Yeah. Not too much wobbly cam, but definitely choppy, I like the verite style, and I like the jump cuts. Yeah, it's got that feel to it, that slightly edgy, not Greengrassy. It's not documentary style like Greengrass's stuff.
But something that draws you, makes you feel like you're really there, and
but you do feel like you're there with it. But it does have the fantastical elements that kind of add to the ambiance of the whole thing.
Mm.
And on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a rating of 89%, with the consensus reading bracingly elevated by a typically committed lead performance from Joaquin Phoenix. The film confirms writer-director Lynn Ramsey as one of modern cinema's most unique and uncompromising voices. That is a recommendation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sold.
Yeah. Sheila O'Malley of RogerEbert.com gave it 4 out of 4 stars, saying the film is a taut and almost unbearably intense 90 minutes without an ounce of fat on it. I think I alluded that it doesn't waste time. Ramsey doesn't give you a second to breathe. And Guy Lodge of Variety said Ramsey may be the world's greatest working filmmaker, which I think is over-egging it a bit.
Mm.
But she is great, yeah. Called the film astonishing, a stark, sinewy, slash-to-the-bone hitman thriller, far more concerned with the man than the hit. Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
So this leads me to a question, which is, you've got one of the greatest filmmakers of our writers and filmmakers of our time.
Yeah.
And she's a woman, and she's still making a film about a terribly tortured, violent man.
Mm.
Why can't we have films, meaningful films, about things other than what it's like to be in the head?
A terribly tortured,
violent, white, middle-aged man.
Yeah,
or
so
young man.
That's a good point. That is a good point. I think that her adaptation of We Need to Talk About Kevin does try to redress that balance, because it is about a mother trying to come to terms with the fact that her son is a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And that one of the heartbreaking things about that film, I'm talking about We Need to Talk About Kevin now, one of the heartbreaking things about that film is that she loves her son, and she's seen her son turn from a loving, kind little boy into an absolute psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
Seemingly overnight. And it's about her trying to come to terms with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I think in the past, Ramsey has made films that feature strong, conflicted, real female characters.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe you would never really hear is atypical in her back catalogue.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that with a complaint like that, it's never about the individual film, is it? Because obviously it's perfectly legitimate to make a film about anything you like.
Mm.
But it is also part of a pattern of, you know, which is something we mentioned with Blade Runner 2049 as well. Like,
yeah.
Even though it's a great piece of art, it's still about what it's like to be inside the mind of a strong, silent, tortured white man.
Yep. But that's not to kind of that's not to take anything away from the movie.
No.
It is still an astonishingly great piece of work.
Of course, I think you've already pretty much answered the question. But what did it? Did this change your life for the better? Did it change the way you thought about mental illness? You know, what? How did it? You said it stuck with you, and you've got these pictures in your head.
Yeah, it has stuck with me. Yeah, I think it's one of these things where if I can corner someone for like 5 minutes and just convince them to watch it, then I'd be happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those types of films.
But why? What? How would it make them a better person? Or
I don't think. Well, I don't think it maybe would. I think that it just deserves to be seen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's good art.
It's that good. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to change. It probably won't change your life or anything. It's just really good art.
Right. Right. Right.
And not only is it good art, it's a cracking story. It's 90 minutes long. As the review said, there's not an ounce of fat on it. It's a really well told story. And the, you know, it manages to be both exciting and brutal and arty at the same time, which is quite a feat. Mm. You know, that's the kind of thing that film directors like someone like Peter Greenaway would probably get away with something like that in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
But very few filmmakers can do that these days. I think that maybe Luc Besson a long time ago could have done something, but these days, mm-hmm. you know, he's just past his peak, shall we say. Yeah, needs to be seen. This is one of my soapbox movies.
Right.
Yeah.
And what does the title refer to?
I don't actually know. I'm just having a look at that to see if I can figure it out. But I can't. I don't know. That's a good question. I would offer to look it up, but that would just be man looking thing up on
the
internet. So I'm not going to do it.
Perhaps if listeners got some ideas,
just
write in.
Definitely, yeah.
Because it's the kind of thing where you maybe get a handle on what the point of a film is if you understand how the title refers to it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. No, I'm tempted to look, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, just watch it a few more times till you figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that sounds like a Wayne's World quote.
It's not, as far as I know.
No, but it sounds like it could be one.
I spoke to someone yesterday who hasn't seen Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
What?
Yeah, because he was telling me about actually a film where someone meets Death and plays a game with him.
And you're like, that's Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. And he's like, no.
And I said, and that's also really seal. It's really important to watch that film so that you can fully understand Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Yeah.
And that was the moment, listener, when he admitted that he'd never seen Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
That's most non-heinous.
Yeah.
I went to see John Wick Chapter 3 last week.
Oh, yeah.
It's good.
Really?
It's very good.
Oh, better than 2.
Oh, much better than 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Much, much better than 2. I thought 2 was a crushing disappointment.
It was, yeah.
But 3 is a real return to form.
Excellent.
For everyone. Particularly in the fight scenes, which I think in 2 was somewhat, you know, it's still there, but I didn't think they were quite on point.
It felt more of the same-ish.
Yeah, this is, although it is, of course, more of the same-ish, it feels fresher.
Mm-hmm.
And it leaves it open for more, which is, you know.
Of course. I mean, they blatantly heading in that direction, weren't they?
Yeah, just make more. Just keep making them until Keanu can't move. He's still just an incredible screen presence. Fantastic.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know whether we ever talked about it. I did watch The Colour of Water. Have you watched that?
The Colour of Water. I've not heard of this.
It's is that what it's called?
I don't know. Dark Water?
By Del Toro, I think.
No. The Shape of Water.
The Shape of Water. Yeah, not The Colour of Water. The Colour of Water is just blue.
No, it's, what is it though? What, seawater is green.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Yeah. But still,
yeah.
Still, I mean, it's just...
Okay.
At the end of the day, it's just a colour.
Ah, oh, you're doing Nigel Tufnell quotes again. Of course, at the end of the day, the colour, it's just water. A colour. It's just a colour, isn't it? You know, and the colour of water is green.
It's blue, isn't it?
It's green.
It's blue, isn't it?
It's blue.
Yeah, The Shape of Water.
What did you think of The Shape of Water?
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
I really thought it was a treat.
Yes. And it was really great to see a movie that is, you know, a fantasy with some quite strong horrific elements at times, winning, you know, big Oscars the year that it won, which was very refreshing.
I liked the magical realistness of it.
Yeah, very much.
And, yeah, it was just nice to look at. Just really enjoyable to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, just all the... I want to call it, like, hyper-retro.
Yeah, definitely hyper-retro, yeah.
Like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Mm. Yep.
Where the retroness is just so amped up that it's nothing like... It's not attempting to be like what it was like. It's
I know
like,
what you mean, yeah.
It's like a cartoon version.
I very much enjoyed Michael Shannon's bad guy in The Shape of Water. You know, he's making a career. He does play sort of more ambivalent good guys occasionally, but for the most part, he's played pretty straight down the line bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And in The Shape of Water, he was properly a bad guy. I mean, there's mm-hmm. no mistaking that he was a bad sort. Really, really well played. You know, this is a man who will stop at nothing to get what he wants. I also like Michael Stuhlbarge as the scientist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I thought Sally Hawkins was terrific.
Yeah, I was going to say, is she the lead?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was just excellent.
And Richard Jenkins from 6 Feet Under as the landlord was...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody's just great in it. And Doug Jones as the monster.
I had to stop watching 6 Feet Under because it was too sad.
Oh, did you? You stopped watching?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I watched it to the end.
Because it's like, you know people who are that miserable. Why would you... why would you get to know these new people who don't even exist who are that miserable?
Yeah, funny enough, my wife says things like that.
So miserable.
We watched the first episode of Russell T. Davis's new show, Years and Years.
Right.
And she said... I think about this stuff all the time. I don't want to see it on screen.
Yeah.
And I can understand what she says when she says that, but I kind of enjoy the... I think I'm a bit of a miserabilist, so...
Yeah, I mean, I've got much higher tolerance for it than my wife.
Yeah.
We watched an episode of... I think it might be called Coming Home, where about someone who'd come out of prison after 20 years.
Is that... Yeah, I think...
Is it called Coming Home?
I know the show you mean, yeah. I haven't seen it, but I've heard it's good.
Oh, yeah, it's really good. It's described as a comedy, but right. There were basically no laughs in it. It was utterly, like, so realistically awful.
Oh, dear.
You know the way some, like Fleabag, some, by saying that you're comedy, you get to do things that are, like, so off the wall that they're, like, real life.
Yes, yes.
It's like that. There's not actually any laughs. It's just like not the kind of drama that would get made if you didn't say it was a comedy.
Right, yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, it seems really good, but yeah.
It's a comedy also, in the way that a Shakespeare comedy is a comedy.
No. Don't Forget the Driver.
Oh, that's terrific.
Which we watched one episode of, and it's just like...
You've got to watch the whole thing. Like, it's too depressing. It's so good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really planning to squeeze that in somewhere because that seemed really good.
Okay, so I did some casting, not actual casting, but my dream casting mm-hmm. of because James Wan is making a movie of Salem's Lot,
which is another
Stephen King.
Stephen King.
Yeah. It was made into a TV movie in the 80s, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't think I've seen it, or definitely haven't read it.
It's a variable quality, the TV movie. It's actually directed by Toby Hooper, who didn't direct Poltergeist, but did direct The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the TV movie is of variable quality. It features David Soul, who played Starsky or Hutch on Starsky and Hutch. So I was doing some casting of that in my head. And there's a character called Mr. Barlow who runs the local antique shop, which is a front for, you know, Mr. Straker, who's the local vampire. And I thought, in the TV movie, he's played by James Mason in very oily James Mason fashion. But I thought that in the movie version, it should be Toby Jones. Because Toby Jones can be very sinister. And
The bloke out of Dave's Got the Driver.
Yeah, he can be very sinister, but seems very unthreatening.
Yeah.
I think he'd be fantastic as Mr. Barlow. He's great in... there's a movie called Journey's End, which is based on a play all about the trenches during World War One. He plays a private in that who is responsible, kind of a Baldrick-type character.
Mm-hmm.
He's responsible for cooking for the officers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sort of delivering a cooked rat, basically, to the officers. And for one meal, they ask him what it is, and he says it's cutlets. And one of the officers says, oh, what type? And as he's walking away, he says, the cutlet kind, like that. And the line is delivered in a way that just tells you so much about the character.
Mm.
In that he can talk back to an officer like that and get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a terrific actor, Toby Jones. So I think that's my dream casting for Mr. Barlow.
Did you watch The Detectorists?
I've seen series one and started series two. Yeah, I really liked it.
Really? That's like a hidden gem.
Yeah, it is. I've got series three recorded. Yeah, it's good. It's very good. Him and Mackenzie Crook are a good team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice that Mackenzie Crook found the right kind of work.
Well, he did. He was in like three Pirates of the Caribbean movies, possibly four, which are just awful, awful films. Good theme park ride, terrible movies. So it's good to see him on telly.
Cool. That was random. Have you got any plugging to do?
Yes, I have. So I've been posting some stuff to my podcast feed. I'm going to do some after we recorded this pod, I'm going to talk about John Wick and also about Godzilla King of the Monsters that I went to see last night.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, podcast feed is called Movie Mashup. No camel case, no caps.
No camel case, no caps.
You can search for that in your podcasting app of choice or indeed on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So that used to be a radio show. Now it's just a podcast feed.
Not just.
Well, it is a podcast.
Now it's a podcast
feed. Now it's a podcast feed, listeners.
And it's not just for people in the world.
In fact, I big you up on it. You should be glad to know. I thank you for hosting it.
Oh, yeah, the files.
Yeah, the files, yeah. Oh, the files. Oh,
The files. The wells.
That is my plugging.
Have I got plugging? Well, I've been doing some stuff. So I've been learning a bit more about a programming language called Rust, and the more I learn about it, the more I like it. I really like it. Mm. As followers of me will know, I've been writing a programming language for probably getting on for 10 years now without really making any progress. And I have a rolling deadline of about 20 years from now when it'll be done. But a number of the things that were really important to me about my programming language have actually been not just ideated but actually implemented and working in Rust.
Nice.
So Rust is not everything that I wanted in a programming language, but a couple of the really key ideas that I had that I wanted are in there and work. So that is really exciting and also slightly disappointing. But I've been writing what I hope is going to become a multiplayer Tron Light Cycle game.
Ooh.
And I'm hoping that people are going to write their own AIs to play. Ooh. As well as, it'll be human playable as well. So if you don't know what a Tron Light Cycle game is, it's like you control a line that gets longer, draws itself, gets longer and longer, and you have to trap in the other lines.
Yes.
So it's a nice simple problem for an AI to solve. So I'm hoping people will write little bits of JavaScript in the web page that will then play against other people's bit of JavaScript all around the world.
Cool.
To try and to win. But anyway, if you're interested in that, you just have to follow me on GitHub, because GitLab.com/AndyBalam, because all I'm doing at the moment is writing the code for that. I haven't made any videos about it, but at some point I think I'll make some videos about how I wrote it, because I'm finding the way you do things in Rust really cool, and I'm hoping that I can write this program and have it just run on one computer, but thousands of people will be able to use it simultaneously because of
thousands?
Some of the nice things about
thousands?
Rust works. Yeah, I think so.
Good lord. This sounds intriguing.
Yeah, so Rust is cool. I'll probably make if I get round to it, I'll make some videos about like just basics of how you get anything working in Rust. Because one of the things about Rust that is maybe not so good is that it contains some concepts that are really hard to get your head round that you don't have to get your head round in other languages.
Mm.
So what I'm trying to say is it's really hard.
But it's rewarding.
But it's really cool. So, of course, now my expectations for my language that I'm writing is that it'll have all that cool stuff, but not be so hard.
Definitely something to aspire to.
Watch that space. 20 years.
20 years from now. So by the time we finish this pod, which will be in 20 years' time, because, you know, films keep coming out.
Yeah.
You've got to talk about them.
So I was listening to a podcast, the Listigist podcast, which I really like.
Yes.
For like people who used to be Christians or still are Christians but don't know what's going on and all that kind of stuff. It's really interesting. And also for like atheists who still want to have some kind of spirituality. Anyway, the point is, they've done 100 episodes and they've started like a global movement.
Ooh.
And I was thinking, we're not that far off 100 episodes.
No, we can't be. Maybe we should do a count.
We've still only got one listener, but we love that listener.
We do love you, listener. Yeah, we just wish you'd talk to us more.
I did mention that we were doing a pod tonight, and Dapper said, "Oh, another podcast."
Yes, another one.
So it sounded in textual form like that was a positive.
Okay, is that a positive? Or is it like, podcast?
Another podcast. I think it was a positive.
Okay.
Maybe we have one listener.
Maybe we do. We definitely have more than one listener. I know of several people who subscribe and listen to us.
Cool. Yeah, we had 76 unique downloads in May.
Yes, and I remember when my friend Scott on Twitter was asking for podcasts to subscribe and listen to. And I said, well, have you tried the Good Robot Andes? And he said, I already subscribed to the Good Robot Andes. So so we have, you know, we have more than one listener.
Cool.
Yeah, but we just wish you talked to us more, listener, because we love you.
Yeah, and also talk to your friends. Tell them.
Tell all your friends. What should we tell them?
Tell them...
I'm Batman.
And so am I. Tell them about the podcast. Tell us how you'd like the podcast to be better in ways that we can achieve.
Yeah, in ways... exactly. Yeah.
Like, realistically...
Do you want another countdown? That's because we were talking about doing another countdown, weren't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Top one Arnie films.
Top one Arnie films. The top sci-fi of the 20th century, which is a big subject. But maybe we could do like 10 instead of 30 films.
Yeah. Top horror of the 21st century.
And we also talked about top horror of the last 20... Yeah, really. It's been 20 years since 2000. There's quite a lot of, there are a lot of films to talk about that have come out since then.
I still basically think it's 1984.
I still basically think it's 1999. And that,
right.
That you know...
You just have to stop partying.
We're all partying in Mulholland Drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like things have got worse.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Is that just what you think when you get to our age?
No, I think that things have definitely got worse.
But the young people will save us.
Well, hopefully they will. I think that Greta Thunberg is trying her absolute best to save us from ourselves. Despite the fact that...
Who's that?
She's the leader of the climate protest movement. Young Swedish girl. Young Swedish woman. She's doing her absolute best to save us from ourselves, despite stupid old white men saying that they hope that she goes away so that they can get on with raping the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not going away, so they can all shut up.
Cool.
Frankly.
Yeah, but what I was going to say was, like, you have to give us suggestions to improve the podcast that don't involve us not actually being stupid old white men, because...
That's
realistically
what...
we are going
to
be.
Yes, that's right. I try not to be, but I am regularly reminded that I am, so
cool. Well, on that note, we're speaking to you, listener, on the day that Donald Trump visits the UK.
It's I'm trying to think of, I can't think of anything Trumpian to say, really. Oh, he said, what did he say? He said, everywhere I go in London, they love me. They're cheering everywhere, which is a lie.
They've made an enormous baby just to honour me.
And when he came out of number 10, everybody booed him.
Right.
I think maybe he thinks that booing is cheering in his head. Maybe.
He represents a lot of things that I disagree with. Mm, and I would be protesting if I didn't think that it would be ridiculous of me to be... If the only thing that motivated me to protest was to be negative about someone.
Mm.
I feel like I should be protesting about...
Something else.
Climate change, not about how I find a particular person objectionable.
Yeah, I think climate change is the thing to be protesting about. Definitely. Actually, some positive news on climate change. Not on climate change in general, but... several supermarkets, notably Waitrose, have started trialling reusable bottles for things like shampoo and detergent and stuff like that, which is a great idea.
Yeah.
Tesco's are doing the same thing, so they're offering sort of greengrocer style produce rather than plastic bags for everything. It's a long
Sometimes
time.
I think
it's
about
a long
the
time
of,
coming.
The amount of film. And rigid plastic containers that just go in the bin every day.
Yep. So much of it, isn't there? So much of it. Our local council started recycling plastic containers. Not from the doorstep, but from recycling sites.
Right.
Which is good. And they will be doorstep recycling that, I think, from next year.
We recycle everything that can be recycled from our doorstep. It's
right.
Really good.
Well, including plastic containers.
Yeah.
Including food packaging, that's really good.
Yeah, not film, but rigid containers.
No, they don't do film, no, but they do the rigid stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So that means you really basically don't have much in your bin.
Yeah, well, the recycle bin is much fuller than the bin.
Yeah, bin.
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 No camel case, no caps.
Bin. Pledge bin.
Pledge bin.
Pledge pin. Oh yeah, I made it. Yeah,
spike.
Some clipping there. Yeah.
Clip. All right. Well, I'll edit that in.
Excellent. Is that it?
That's got to be. I mean, I think we finished some time ago.
I think we did. Yeah. I'm sure that listeners already zoned out with us talking about recycling.
Yeah, I mean, at the point we started talking about our own viewing figures.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
That's
Thanks, listener. We apologise again.
Yeah. Sorry. But we love you. Please talk to us more.
See you next time.
Bye.